Nessie's walk.
Massive.
Didn't I pee? Did a big pee-pee?
You like, more than any dog that I've had or walked, or he knows exactly where he wants to go.
Yeah.
He's in the morning, he's like, okay, I'm going to go this way today.
So stubborn.
Yeah. And then if you try and deviate from the path that he's chosen, he will literally, like this morning, he just put his bum on the ground.
No, he won't. Yeah.
He just sat down.
He has ripped his little tote beans apart in an effort to like not do the thing he's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Like he's real. And that's like a mix of Chihuahua. Chihuahuas are stubborn and Jack Russells are stubborn.
Do we know exactly what his background is?
I mean, I think you can do like a blood test and find out. Like, it's definitely Foxy Terrier.
Because I feel like I saw a little Dash Hound yesterday at work when I was walking up to work. And I was like, his little face looked like Jim's. I was like, oh, maybe there's Dash Hound in Jim.
Well, I think that the point in his nose, that is a bit of a Dash Hound thing. But the point in his nose is also very Foxy Terrier.
Yeah.
But he's got a Jack Russell body, but he doesn't have Jack Russell tail or ears. There's a short hair. There's actually a dog called a rat terrier. He is a rat terrier, yeah. I believe. But his
it
tail
could be,
and his ears are
what the Yanks called an Australian terrier in there as well.
And his paws, tail and ears are Chihuahua, but he's too big to be a Chihuahua. You know?
Yeah, he's way bigger than a Chihuahua. Anyway.
But we know that Evelyn.
That's puppy dog.
We know that Evelyn is toy poodle cross cavoodle cross fuckhead. She's a beautiful girl. Inbred. That's why she's got so many medical issues, because she's inbred. But you know what? But I want a cute little doggy. I'm going to pay $5,000 and go to a breeder, because I want a small dog. I want a little oodle dog. I will tell you now, people, if you have purchased a dog and it has oodle in its name, so cavoodle, rubber-doodle, fuckhead doodle, whatever. Any dog that has been bred.
Doodle-doodle.
Any dog that has been bred with a poodle and you've purchased it from somewhere, you've exchanged money.
Yep.
There is a poodle dog, female or male out there, that is getting absolutely tortured and abused and just being cycled through making puppies after puppy after puppy. So I hope you feel good about yourself. If you've got an oodle dog out there, very rarely will I ever be told a story where it's like, oh, yeah, we retired the dog after two, you know, pregnancies.
Mm.
You know, like, prove me wrong, Lisa. Prove me wrong. But I hope you feel happy that you got your cute little dog, because the dog that we've got is inbred as fuck and has so many issues. But I hope you all feel good.
This is, should we just watch it real quick, the only podcast that will make you feel this down on a Sunday morning about the state of puppy farms. I'm Dr. Damien Gibson. You can go to 114 years of puppy school to be called Dickhead. Thank you very much. And in the blue corner, it's the Italian girl, and she'll rip your bloody arms off. She is Kelly Big Whoop. Want to fight about it?
I'm sorry.
Sticker.
I don't mean to be so ugh at the beginning, but even like my brother is looking, you know, like I entertain the idea of getting a dog for his family, because his dog died about 2 years ago.
Yes.
And he had an oodle back then. So even with him, he's like, oh, well, I just, you know, I go buy one. And I'm like, I was like, don't buy a dog. I go, I am part of a rescue place. Leave it with me. I will find you a dog. It might not be for 6 months or whatever, but I will get you a dog that suits your family. But but he's like, but these are regular people that are like, we want a dog and we want a dog that suits our family, you know, like one that they can grow from a puppy that's not going to get too big, that's kind of hypoallergenic, but you know what I mean? Like, you have to
people have needs. Yeah. There's a lot of people in the dog fraternity, like a dog, what would you call it? Foster community, or just in general dog lovers, who will sort of shame people for wanting a smaller dog or whatever. You know, some people have small apartments. Some people don't
have small children, you know,
yeah,
and a big dog.
Like, yeah.
And also like a bit, like a lot of people are scared of, you know, getting a rescue, you know, after a certain age, big dog, because they're worried about it behaving, you know.
Poorly.
And because my thing is that I'm like, in the foster, we're starting over, you know, we test dogs. So one of the things I've done with my adopted dogs before is you test them, like, around kids and that kind of stuff. So and you're transparent. You're, like, not tested with cats. You know, previously I've had little kids around some of my fosters and I noticed one of my fosters was growling at the little kid. So I put that in the adoption thing. And when the people adopted, that was Eddie. When people adopted Eddie, I was like, just letting you know that there was a bit of a growling because I haven't heard it before. And they said, oh, don't worry. We sometimes have a friend with young kids. Thank you for letting us know. We'll keep an eye out, you know. But also starting over, let you return dogs. If something happens, it's in the contract where you're not allowed to give the dog away.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to return it back to us.
Yeah.
And we will rehome it again.
Right.
So you're really in a safe spot if you adopt, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's only within 30 days you get your money back. And there's been, like, some people have returned dogs, like, after 4 years and they want their money back.
Mm.
And it's like, no, this is a not-for-profit. Everyone's a rescue, is a volunteer. It's a $500 donation at this point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, my God. She's so... Dog has come back to me with her toy and she's given me the little as if to say, can you throw it?
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry to give everyone a, you know, blah blah blah, but
that's all right. We were talking during the week. That's our little beep 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 puppy update. We were talking during the week about maybe you starting to drop some showbiz stories. For the podcast? Is that something that you want to do or
showbiz stories? Just because I was telling Damien about auditions that I've had in the past. And so maybe, look, once a week I'm happy to give everyone an audition story.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, I'll give you a story. So one time I was doing a commercial and I played a waitress in the commercial. And so it was like set in a bowls club. So I was at a bowls club and I had to lay food down for a bunch of old people sitting at a table.
Right.
And so the director's like, so I want you to grab these two plates, turn around, put one here, turn around again, grab the third one and put it here. And then I said, because I'd already been waitressing for a long time, I said, do you want me to carry the three plates at once? And he went, how? Show me. And I, because as a waitress, I learned how to carry three plates,
mm-hmm.
sometimes four if they were small enough. And I showed it to him and he was like, he was amazed. It was like I just started speaking Italian to him.
Mm.
Like he was just like, wow. So I picked
So
I picked up the three plates and I put them one by one. And people were like genuinely like, people were genuinely like impressed with it. Genuinely, like they were like, wow, that's incredible. Look at what this actress can do. Wow, she's got a special talent. You should put that on your CV, put that on your bio. So that was my blah, blah, blah. And then there was like a part where there was like a scene at a coffee machine. So I was like, yeah, you know, pretending to do the coffee thing. And then I can't remember if it was the director or the AD or someone was like, you know, it was like in between shots. And he was like, hey, can I get a skinny cap, please? Like, ask me to make him a coffee.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh, I'm not a waitress that works here. I'm an actor that was hired for the day. And he was like, oh, okay. Sorry. Oh, I played the role of waitress so fucking well that they actually didn't know that I was the hired featured actor for the day. They just thought I worked there. They just thought I worked, like, for some reason, they just fucking thought I worked there. I was so good at my job as a waitress.
Because all of these people who work in the arts, they go straight from some, like, hands-off high school to a fucking university. Their parents, you know, worth millions of dollars. They've never worked a proper job in their life. Mm. So to you, you're like...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? It's so good. He thought I was... Oh, he thought I worked there. And like, so he was just like, oh, we must be just getting this chick for free because she works here. So she's just like, whatever.
God, I feel like.
I was that good, Damien.
I feel like you could put that.
Acting!
I feel like you could put that scene in Extras. Not that we talk about Ricky Gervais anymore, but that, that could be a scene.
Yeah, I did a stand-up for a while, but it never – the punchline was he actually thought I was a blah, blah, blah. Like it wasn't a big enough punchline, the tag. Yeah. It's just a funny story. Yeah. So it's like Nate Bargatze does this really well where he has a story about something, which is a very ordinary story. Like his story is my wife mows the lawns. I don't. But he makes it into a 25-minute bit that is so fucking funny. And that's something I was never able to do with stand-up. Like I could build up a story kind of thing, but not hammer it out like Nate could.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I just think about that bit and how he's like, you know, tradesman comes to the house and, you know, they're like he answers the door. He goes, oh, you probably want to talk to my wife. Like, yeah, you probably, yeah, you want to talk to the man in the house. I'll just go get my wife. Because she's in, you know, like just stuff like that. And I know that I'm butchering it, but I just never was able to do that because I had and I always have so many silly stories. I have so many stories like that.
That's what a podcast is for. But I also, Kelly is really underselling her abilities as a stand-up and
I
always
just couldn't make things
has
as funny
from
as
the day. The one of the biggest arguments we have is literally about how funny we both think Kelly is. Kelly thinks not funny at all, and I think the funniest person in the world. We're about to have it right now where Kelly will be like, no, I did it. No one thought I was funny. And I'm like, everyone thinks you're funny.
Maybe things would have been different for me. I mean, I think maybe things would have been different for me in comedy if, because I was diagnosed with ADD very late in life and I did comedy. I probably was like full on with comedy probably about 8 months after diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if I maybe had a bit more organization in my brain through the really important years of stand-up, that it maybe it would have made a difference. Maybe I would have been more.
It might have.
I don't know because I was so bad at organizing myself. Like I always had to produce every show I did, so for every Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth, every show, Brisbane, Sydney, every festival I did, I had to produce myself. No one ever put their hand up and said, I'll take a chance on you, I'll produce you. And I'm just not good at that stuff. And the people that do well are the ones that can do that stuff, or the people that have someone take a chance on them early and do that. I just could never get anyone to do it for me. And I feel like that was one of my massive – I feel like that was a big failure for stand-up with me where I just couldn't get the word out about me because I couldn't do that work. It was really hard to
do. Yeah, but you shouldn't have to – I mean, that's the thing. Like, but I know you're going to be like, oh, well, that's the industry. All I would say – we've had this conversation a million times. I played in bands – there was a crew of us that all sort of came up at the same time, so much so that there was one time where a bunch of us were all hanging out at a party. We all worked out that there was a member of like 9 different bands at the same UMI show in like 1997 when we're all 16 years old. So we all came up together, and Jet was one of those bands, and they weren't the best band in that. Do you know what I mean? Like Nick and Chris in that band weren't the best songwriters in that crew. Do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes it's just like, I'm not saying they're bad. I'm not saying they're bad. I'm not saying they're bad. They're very good. They were a very good band. That's why people like them. But there were people in that crew. I'm not saying me. I was probably the runt of the litter. But there were people in that crew who were much better songwriters, much better singers, better looking, cooler, but they didn't get signed for whatever reason.
The reality of showbiz, it's a very harsh reality out there because there's lots of people that are a lot better at doing that job. Like I could name 20 people that are better at doing stand-up than, you know, this person that we see on TV every
all
fucking
time,
day, you know? And that's just the way it is for whatever reason. But I do believe that if I was undeniable, I would have broken through. So, and because I wasn't undeniable, that's why I couldn't break through. You know what I mean? There's also I couldn't do any of the, you know, back of house stuff. I mean, I could, but I was always very bad at it. Like I could never feel get tickets to be sold and sell. And I really didn't have anyone. Like, there was no, like, I just wasn't good enough for other comics to be talking about me.
I don't think
to
people
be like, oh, she's doing really well and stuff. I just wasn't on anyone's zeitgeist ever.
I don't know how many people listen.
That's
this,
on me.
I don't know how many people listening to this podcast are like on the verge of trying to get into the arts, but this is something that was never said to me. And people who make it sound magical, or that they were like God chosen. You know what I mean? I remember Noel Gallagher talking about how it takes him like 3 to 4 minutes to write a song. And then you find out later on down the track that that's just complete bullshit. Like, because you hear all these stories about Paul McCartney. It's like, oh, well, Paul McCartney's maybe a different story. But, you know, songwriters being like, oh, it just came to me and I just wrote it. It was just, you know, and then you find out like, oh, okay, yeah, the riff or the chord progression might have come to you. But then you've demoed the song, you've done pre-production, it's been produced in a studio. But from the time that song's been, like those chords have been put together to the time the record comes out, it's a 3-year process. But they don't say that, because that's not show business. That's not part of the magic. The other thing I wanted to say as well is that when I quit music when I was 32 years old. And I think looking back on it, it was undiagnosed autism as well. But I was so tired. I was so tired of, because in pretty much every band that I would be in, I would also be like the mover and shaker. I would help organize gigs. Not only were you playing your own gigs and rehearsing your own gigs, I'm probably going to 3 to 4 gigs a week and then going out 2 to 3 times, 4 times a week to like network and keep yourself in the loop and, do you know what I mean? Like, I also had an alcohol problem. But, like, looking back on it, I would have been much happier if I had just sort of gone hands off the wheel with all of that and just played. I think I'd probably still be playing in bands now, but I completely burnt myself out from the whole industry because I had to do all that other bullshit. I wasn't just a bass player. You know what I mean? And a songwriter. I was also a manager, a producer, an engineer, a driver, a roadie.
I just got so sick and tired of making so many sacrifices with everything. I've left funerals because I had to go drive to a gig, you know, like financially, like, you know.
Being away from home all the time.
Yeah, my fertility is up the shitter. I should have had kids earlier, but I didn't because of comedy. Like, all these sacrifices, an enormous amount of sacrifices made. And I was still, every show that I was doing, I put all this work into, you know, 4 or 5 people coming. I was like, what is happening? Like, anyway, let's talk about something more positive. Let's talk about Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, that's what we're talking about this week?
Well, I mean, we can talk about Jesus Christ Superstar. We can talk about the China Syndrome.
Let's talk about Jesus Christ Superstar.
Okay. Well, if we don't get back to Happy Gilmore. We haven't talked about that. Mate, we've got so much. But we'll save
Happy Gilmore 2. We're not.
Listen, can I just say, I saw an ad for Happy Gilmore 2 and I said to myself, what I should watch that. I should watch that, right, just to see what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remembered we actually had watched it. I'd forgotten that we watched Happy Gilmore 2 because I was so disinterested. Like, it is what it is, right? Whatever. It's a silly movie, blah, blah, blah. And it works off nostalgia as much as it can.
Mm-hmm.
But I forgot that we watched it.
All right, let's just talk about it now. Because I don't think it's going to take very long. I was actually looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, same.
Because I have a lot of fondness for the first two Sandler movies and The Wedding Singer. It's not bad.
Hmm.
And I like Sandler. Yeah.
He's fun.
It's not high up by any stretch. But I just like him.
Yeah.
You know, just when I get to the point where I'm like, ah, fucking Sandler, I'll see him do something and be like, no, he's all right. Mm. And then his dramatic performances, like, I know you're going to be like, wanker, but like him and the work that he did in that Safdie Brothers film, Uncut Gems, is
Uncut Gems.
It's fucking
Uncut Gems, mate. I have such a crush on Julia Fox from Uncut Gems.
But it's fucking amazing. He's amazing in that film. I laughed probably 8, 9, 10 times throughout the film, but they're like, by the end of the movie, there's like a, you know, it's a sports, the bones of the movie is a sports film. And by the time you get to the tournament, which is like the last act of the film, it's just a Netflix fever dream. Like, there's just so much like AI, CGI, like market researched bullshit. Like the amount of like cameos that are in there from just like, you know what I mean? Spoilers if you haven't watched it, but like Eminem's in it. Post Malone's in it. There's a bunch of WWE wrestlers in it. MJF from AEW's in it.
Yeah, it's a movie that's just, it really is hanging on to the nostalgia for the people that loved it when it was first made.
Yeah.
Like, that's what
it basically the whole PGA roster is in it. Like, if you like golf, every second person who shows up in this film, you're like, oh, holy fuck. Rory McIlroy's in this film. Jack Nicholas is in this film. Like, they've basically got, the only person they don't have in this film who's a famous golfer is Tiger Woods.
Mm.
Basically, every other, Nick Faldo.
They probably asked him.
They would have absolutely asked him, but yeah, he wasn't in the film. Like, the film is bad. It's an Adam Sandler Netflix film.
But it's whatever, you know.
By halfway through the film, I was like, I just want this to end. It's like every film in 2025, it's 40 minutes too long. But I'm the same, bub. I kind of forgot that I watched it. It didn't make me angry. It was just like, this is what it is. I would give it 1.5 grumps out of 5.
I'll give it 2 grumps.
Yeah.
Because it's not, I give it 2 because it knows exactly what it is. It didn't try to be anything else than what it was, which was silly. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that it didn't try and be Citizen Kane.
Half a grump for MJF being in it, but yeah. I take half a grump off for those fucking, what are they called? Search and Destroy? What are the fucking Nepo babies from SNL?
Oh, yeah.
What are they called?
Oh, who cares? Those Nepo babies, the guys that do the shorts on SNL.
None of them are funny. Oh, God, they're
none
so
of them.
Bad.
None of them. It just happens that every one of their dads is someone kind of or whatever. Like, it's
they
so
answer fun. The question, what would the Lonely Island be like if there was no talent?
Well, there's a really good sketch, actually, from Dakota Johnson when she was hosted SNL.
They wrote that.
Yeah. And that's the only time.
There's one sketch of theirs that's funny, which is just Dakota Johnson ripping on them.
Yeah, just going.
But it's probably shit. What it is? It's probably shit that they've read about themselves on social media.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they've just written it into a fucking. It would have been the quickest sketch they've ever written. Mm-hmm. Let's just type our names into Twitter and see what comes up.
Oh, God. Anyway, so Damien watched the 1972 movie version of Jesus Christ Superstar.
I sure did. This is, I think we've given the backstory on the podcast before, but let's just do a little bit of context here because it's a review and you begin with context. Kelly's favorite thing in the world is Jesus Christ Superstar.
Besides peace and environmentally friendly things.
Yeah.
And women's rights.
Yeah.
Nah, it's Jesus Christ Superstar, hands down. I think Jesus Christ Superstar, Mount Everest, Dilotov Pass, conspiracy theories, JFK conspiracy theories. Like, that's my, in terms of interest. And then underneath that, then probably maybe Sopranos, X-Files, Simpsons or something. But it's probably Jesus Christ Superstar is my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah. I have never watched it. I don't like musicals. That's not necessarily true because there are something like I like Les Miserables, which is, you know, pretty.
We're miserable.
Les Miserables.
We're miserable! Exclamation point.
My big thing, because people who love musicals will be like, "Oh, what about this? Or what about this?" I didn't like the Trey and Matt musical.
Book of Mormon. See, I thought it was great.
But this is why. This is why, the music. I would have preferred And I know Trey and Matt wrote some of the music, but then they got like a Broadway guy to come in and Broadway up their show. Otherwise, they wouldn't have got it financed. I don't like the music.
Well, that's fair.
But
enough.
What I like about this, so when I saw a trailer for the 70s Jesus Christ Superstar, and it was, like I said on last week's show, it looked like a film that Quentin Tarantino would tell you, you've got to see it.
Mm.
So then I was like, oh, maybe we should watch Jesus Christ Superstar. And then Kelly was like, really? Mm-hmm. Really? Are you serious? Mm. And it's really good. And the reason why I enjoyed it so much is the songs don't sound... It's interesting because I've seen other like Lloyd Webber, Tim Rice musicals and they very much end up sounding like Broadway musicals, or maybe Broadway musicals sound like them. I don't know.
But this is different.
Phantom, Cats, all that kind of stuff.
Mm. But this is different, right?
Yeah. Anyway, it's a long-winded way of saying I really like the music in this.
And what's interesting for you to say that is that when it comes to Jesus Christ Superstar, people who love musicals, right, most of the time, people who love lots of different musicals, they don't like Jesus Christ Superstar. And I think it's because of that reason, because they love musicals because they love the Broadway musical vibe.
Hmm.
But because Jesus Christ Superstar is so outside the box and rock and roll or whatever it is, it's the most polarizing musical there is. You either fucking love JC with your bones, you fucking love this, like I love it. Like everyone else I know who loves this musical, they love it to their core like I do, right? But people, and then the other end of it is people hate it. Like people, I love Wicked, I love Les Mis, I love this, I love that. Hate Jesus Christ Superstar. It's such a polarizing, the biggest polarizing one there is. Because you love it or hate it. Like when we went and saw it in April, there was a woman sitting next to us who had the T-shirt from the 92 Australian cast. And we were like, because she was like, did you guys see the 92? My sister was like, yeah, I saw it. I was like, I was too young. I was like 10. I didn't get to see it. And she was like, it's still one of the best. You know, Andrew Lloyd Webber regards it as one of the best casts ever. And we're like, we know, because John Farnham was like the best Jesus ever. You know what I mean? Dogs have decided that they want to have a bit of a chat at the moment. Is there a cat out there? I don't know.
I don't know.
Who cares? We'll just ignore it. She'll stop in a minute. She'll stop.
You can't have a dog barking like that on a podcast. It'll drive people like me insane.
So it's very polarizing.
Yeah, I thought it would only be a matter of seconds before you mentioned the 1992 Australian cast, because I don't know how many times I've heard the story. I get told off for telling wrestling stories in this house, but I must have heard about the Australian cast of Jesus Christ Superstar 60 times since we've been together.
Not enough. I think it's the best. What? I love it.
Yeah. Are you going to say anything else about it, or is that it? I love it.
Well, you're the one who watched it for the first time. So you tell me. I've watched that movie a million times. And I can tell you what I think about it. So what did you think about it? You liked it? It was shot in the desert. Carl Anderson is like one of the best Judases ever.
Yeah. It's shot in, I don't really have much to say about it besides the fact that I enjoyed it way more than I thought I would.
But you enjoyed the songs, the music.
The music is good, and it's also an interesting, because like, you know, not knowing anything about it and knowing it was like, you know, the story of Easter week essentially.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, okay, well, Judas will be the bad guy and Jesus will be a good guy.
But we sympathize with Judas, though.
It's not necessarily about that. Yeah. There's real elements of these guys were a group.
Mm.
And almost you sort of get the vibe in this story world that Jesus and Judas were like co-leaders of this group, or at least captain and vice captain.
Yeah.
And By the time we meet them, there's like real strains on their friendship, because Jesus is almost like someone who's gotten famous is like leaning into it. It's kind of, I mean, it's almost like a meditation on the trappings of fame more than anything, or like the rock star. It's almost like kind of anti-star.
I think so. I think a lot of people,
rather than like a, I didn't take it as like a religion, you know, because it's so far removed from the New Testament, the way the New Testament's taught. Like, you know, the
it explores other ideas of what happened, but in terms of Catholicism in general, I find it to be a really good talking point, because Judas is really representing, you know, when you look at it, I think it's way more intellectual than people give it credit for, because of the idea of the ideas it brings to you makes you think about, like, there's lines that Judas says in Heaven on Their Minds where he goes, "No talk of God then, we called you a man." Because this group was all about helping people and spreading the good word of love and compassion. Now, this last, from 30 to 33, those last 3 years, all of a sudden Jesus has like amped up where it's like, is he the fucking son of God?
Yeah.
And Judas is like, shut the fuck up with this God shit. You're ruining all the good work we're doing. And even Jesus is feeling torn by this, because he's like, he doesn't, because at first he doesn't believe that he was chosen by to be the son of God and blah, 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 and which is the whole background of what Gethsemane is, where he is saying to God, like, why should I die? Why should I care? You know, can you show me now that I will not be killed in vain? Because he's like, I would rather just be doing good work than have to die for something. And what am I dying for? And then the lines where there's a very small song called Poor Jerusalem. This is 1972. But he's, when Jesus is like, if you knew all that I knew, my poor Jerusalem, you'd see the truth and you'd close your eyes, you'd close your eyes. Because even fucking today, there is a man-made famine happening. Man-made famine, where Israel are just absolute fucking savages treating these Palestinian people. And this is the land that we're talking about in Jesus Christ Superstar. It's still, you know, it's incredible to me how, you know, 50 years ago, it's still ringing true. The stuff, the ideas that they're talking about, like, It's incredible. I find it so much more deeply with all the stuff happening over there right now. When I saw it in April, there's certain elements of it now that really fucking resonated with me, where I felt really emotionally attached to it, because this whole time Jesus says he doesn't want to die in vain, and he fucking did, you know? And people are still using his word to, you know, create famine, genocide, whatever. It's fucked.
I think
I'm not articulate. I'm sorry.
If I was, had the ability to have a cinema like the New Beverly in LA, which is Quentin Tarantino's cinema, and I could program my own films, I would do a double bill of Jesus Christ Superstar and The Life of Brian.
Oh yeah,
because I think, I mean, it sounds funny at first, but I think there's some real parallels going on in, and I would actually suggest.
And then The Passion of Christ.
Well, that's a whole other.
I won't watch that.
Why?
I haven't watched it. I don't want to. I don't want to watch it. I just.
Is that the.
The Mel Gibson one.
Oh, isn't that called something? I thought The Passion of Christ is Scorsese's.
No, that was The Last Temptation of Christ.
That's right. Yeah.
Mate, I know my Christ, guys. Guys, I know my Christ stories. Okay?
I'm not going anywhere near Mel Gibson shit. No, the reason why I say that is that I think they're kind of both sort of using the Christ story to talk about a lot of different things that are going on in society at the time, which if you guys have never seen it, there's a
John Cleese and Michael Palin go on this sort of like news night show to like defend the life of Brian against, it's like the Archbishop of Canterbury and some other fucking idiot. And Cleese and Palin destroy them because they're from Oxford or Oxbridge. One of them's from Cambridge, one's from Oxford. Mm. And they're hilarious. So they like, you know, they destroy these priests in their defending of the life of Brian. But Michael Palin says, and I agree with him, he's like, listen, the story's not even about Jesus Christ. Mm. Jesus Christ is in the film for 30 seconds, then we pan across to this other idiot, and then the rest of the film is about him. Yeah. And Jesus Christ Superstar is almost kind of the same. I mean, Christ is in this story and he has doubts about his own he doubts his own faith and all that sort of thing. But really, the film is about Judas.
Mm.
And it's about the crossover to me is the fights at the beginning of the film between Jesus and Judas in Jesus Christ Superstar.
What's the buzz?
And the beginning scene in the life of Brian where Brian's trying to find the people's front of Judea and he keeps being told to fuck off because he's like, is this the people's front of Judea? Fuck off, cunt.
I haven't seen Life of Brian ages.
We're the people's front of Judea. Like they've all got slightly different names but they all do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And it was a commentary on the left. Of like left of politics of like everyone gets shunned away from the left of politics because people don't know exactly their tiny little corner of the left.
Yeah.
So it's a, like it's a really interesting sort of look at group dynamics and activism and politics and how people can get sort of dragged away from the goal, which is like for societal change.
Yeah. Which is what Judas talks about.
So it's not really about Jesus. I mean, Jesus Christ Superstar is more about Jesus than The Life of Brian is. But I think like they're both made sort of around the same time and there's like a really interesting crossover there.
Of questioning what we were kind of led to believe or, you know. And it's interesting because I talked to my sister about it who is a, you know, works at a Catholic school, teaches RE and just – you know, she knows a lot about stuff in the Bible where she's just like, you know, out of all the books of the apostle, it only really talks about, you know, this once or that once. Like it's all so different and we interpret it. And then you look at what's happening in America where people use the Bible to push their own agenda of control over women and society and how far removed that is from anything to do with, you know, they use Christ and the Lord's name in vain to get their own policies across, you know.
But that's what's kind of happening in Jesus Christ Superstar. And Judas brings that up where he's like, you know, you keep talking about God, but that's what's going to get us killed.
It will get us,
if you just keep your, you know, like let's stay on message. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like let's stay on message and try and promote peace and love and understanding.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather, like, let's just leave the fucking G word out of it and we'll be cool. And then Jesus is like, but I've been told that I'm the son of God. Yeah. And maybe I am, you know?
Yeah. Nazareth, your favorite son, should have stayed a great unknown. Like his father carving wood, he'd had made good. Tables, chairs, oak and chests would have suited Jesus best. He'd had caused nobody harm, no one alarmed. Like, should have just kept on spreading the word. Of, you know, being a good person, but because he had to be the son of God, he fucked everything up and everything has been in vain since then. Mate, as someone who went to a Catholic school, I don't know, I just find these conversations about, you know, Jesus and the Lord and who the fuck was Mary, his mother, this 12-year-old girl that got pregnant by fucking Immaculate Conception. Definitely there was something happened there, man, where she was very fucking protected. Because she was definitely fell pregnant by someone very powerful and they had to.
She was on the Lolita Express.
Yeah. Like, you know, by some king had made her pregnant. So they had to protect her because one side wanted this child to be born and then one side was probably trying to get rid of her so that there was no, you know, sort of loin to the throne or whatever. I don't know. There's just so much going on, man. And Mary Magdalene, oh, it's
there's
so
layers
good.
To it. But I think layers. I think if you like, do you like good music? If you like good music,
it's good music.
The vocal performances, like I was talking to Kelly about this after we watched the film.
And I'm like, out of all the people that I love in music, I don't know. I think there's maybe only one or two singers that could sing.
Yeah.
Could match what's being done in this film. I know there's other people who have done, like Tim Minchin has done.
Oh, I just don't even. Fuck him for doing Judas. Like,
but it makes sense that Farnham and John Stevens are like looked upon as like great versions of those characters because, I mean, both of those guys have huge voices. So, like, it makes sense. But I could only see someone like Matt Bellamy from Muse being able to like sing that way. There's like Jeff Buckley, if he was still alive, but that's it. I can't really.
Because you've got to have a high.
I don't want to mention Tom York's name because he's a fucking fence sitting scientist, but maybe. But then there's this like power in these voices.
It's that, power,
like,
yeah.
That like, a lot of the indie rock guys I love don't have. That like.
You got to have a Freddie Mercury voice.
Maybe Nick from Jet could. He's got a voice like Freddie Mercury. Yeah,
you got to have that high.
Robert Plant from Zeppelin. I think that's like the interesting thing about that the film or the musical is that it's so heavily influenced by a period of music that I love.
Yeah,
and so I can hear. That's right. I can even in the instrumentation, I'm like, oh, that's Beatles. That's Stones. That's Dylan, that's Led Zeppelin, that's also, like the that's rock the at Yardbirds,
like the interlude, the beginning part,
that guitar, bow, 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 bow,
bow, like that's fucking 70s right.
Yeah,
rock.
Yeah. No, you know? The first song that has the guitar riff that I was singing, I've been singing for like the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's fucking. There's no other, like, I mean, since then, you know, there are musicals like it, but this was the first musical of its time being so rock and roll because everything was so, how do you solve a problem like Maria?
It's all Rodgers and Hammerstein, right?
Yeah. This was like, and you can, like, and even with him, like, you know, he went to, you know, to do Phantom and all sorts of stuff. This is absolute fucking, they'd been on LSD. Rock and roll, like it's in the zeitgeist at the moment because they just did it at the Hollywood Bowl and that kid from Idol, Adam Lambert, did Judas. It's quite beautiful seeing videos of him as a 14, 15-year-old doing Judas in high school. Like this was his dream role and his voice is incredible, like just like real wah, like incredible. And then Cynthia Erivo played Jesus and she's incredible and she's great and her Gethsemane is really, really good. But my fault with her is that she sings with so much emotion. Like when she's doing a Gethsemane, she's crying. And when John Farnham did Gethsemane, he would cry. Because it's actually a song to really – it's quite easy to cry in it because it's so powerful.
Yeah.
And she's so great. She's got a standing ovation for 2 minutes, blah, blah. But there's still an element of her where she's so classically trained, right, that the reason why singers from bands and stuff play that role really well is because they just have that little bit. The guy who did Jesus in April in Australia, he was incredible, or is a singer who was on The Voice. It was like a rock singer on The Voice. Ba, ba, ba. And he knows a friend of mine's husband because he's a musician as well. And he's like, oh, yeah, he's fantastic. And I was like, he sounded like Farnham to me. And he's like, he wishes. I was like, he fucking did. He was incredible. And he's like, nah, I know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like speaks highly of him. But he is a band singer, which is why he did it so well. But the Judas that I saw is a Broadway singer. I didn't like him as a Judas because he was just too like it seems to me a strange thing, mystifying. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You're too Broadway polished. Like, you're not supposed to be.
That's why I've never, I want, you know, Iggy Pop said in an interview once talking about the early Stooges recordings and like the fact that there's mistakes on there and like out of tune guitars and tempos fluctuate and stuff. And he's like, the mistakes are the point.
Yeah. Kind of gives it a bit of zazazoo.
He's like, when it comes to punk rock, the mistakes are the point. And that's always been like, yeah, that's the music that I like. you know, even even guys who are quite polished and sort of classical and folk in their background, like the Beatles, there's still stuff that's like weird and not shouldn't be there. And even on Free, the re-release Free as a Bird, which was the anthology single, because it's been given the Peter Jackson treatment and like all cleaned up and everything. And so you can hear John's vocals even better now. And there's two or three times in the song where he's completely out of key when he hits Bird. Because it's so high. And it was a demo. He wasn't expecting anyone to
hear
this.
But it makes it more.
But it makes it more, like, the fact that his voice sort of cracks on those notes makes it even. The other day when I was watching it, I actually got a bit emotional listening to it because it was like.
Because it's beautiful.
We'll never hear John, like, we'll never hear him again, you know? Like, that's.
Can you believe he got shot at the front of his home?
In America? Yeah,
okay. Yeah, all right. That just blows my mind still. But no, that's why
it doesn't surprise me at all.
But that's why with JC it works to have, because those people that sing in bands and blah blah blah, you know, there is a place for Broadway and there's a place for singers, and Jesus Christ Superstar, those two roles in particular, it just fucking suits.
It's interesting to see how much interest singers. It's generated, the Hollywood Bowl performance has generated, because. I think if you were on Broadway, I mean, Broadway is a $1 billion industry. Mm. I work for a company in the industry, and so you see the figures that they're fine. Broadway's fine. Mm. But I just wonder if, like, you're in the West End or Broadway and you see this popularity, it's like, maybe we should be taking a few more chances on the kind of musicals that we produce, because it's all very, especially from a music standpoint, it's all very cookie cutter. The one, what was the last massive musical? It was Hamilton. And again, that's slightly
fucking great.
Because it's different, right? But I think people will go and watch shows like Wicked and whatever, and like they're great and people love it, but it's not, you're never going to have that, like, you want to try and bring other people in, not just musical people. And like Jesus Christ Superstar is... one of those musicals. Hamilton is another one. Les Miserables is another one, because the music is different to everything
else. I will
tell
you, and I know this is like, it's like so hacked to do this, but Hamilton is great, because even the other day I was talking to someone who'd never seen Hamilton but loves musicals, and they were just like, oh, I'm just not up for the, you know, the white guy rapping. And I was like, the entire cast is black.
Yeah.
Or like a derivative of some, you know, like Latino or black or whatever. The only white guy in Hamilton is King George.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only white guy. And it's not, and I'm like. And
I mean, I think Hamilton has been criticized as like the hip hop is a bit like, well, my name is Hamilton and I'm here to say I'm the coolest guy in the worst way.
And I understand that, but it's not. It's like to me, it's musical genius in terms of, like, that element of, like...
I think it's great. I think it's great. And people really love it. But hip-hop people laugh at it. But that's fine.
No, this was a conversation I had with a white person where they were like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like...
Yeah, well, fuck them.
I'm like, you're talking as someone who's never seen it. And as someone who loves music... It doesn't matter. As someone who loves music and appreciates music, it... Because there's multiple songs in there where there's... It's not rap. It's just fucking not...
Yeah, right. I know.
There we go. That's probably our time to turn off then.
Dog break.
I know. Anyway, Hamilton's great too. But anyway, we should wrap up. But you like Jesus Christ Superstar? How many grumps?
I like this version. I could see myself watching live versions and being like, I didn't like it as much as the film. The film, I just wanted to say really quick, I know we're wrapping up, but it's actually directed really well as well. Yeah. I love the weird... like meta thing of the cast appearing on a bus.
Yeah.
Like they're showing up on a tour bus to like do a rock show, you know, in the middle
and
of Jerusalem.
Literally filmed in Jerusalem.
Yes, it is filmed filmed incredible. Like exactly where Palestine's happening right now. I think a lot of it was in Israel as well. Anyway, who knows? And I think it's directed well. A lot of the panning shots, director of photography is doing amazing work on this film. It's beautiful to look at. The actors are shot really well. Some interesting like a lot of people are running up cliffs to like sing on the top of cliffs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But fuck, if you've got those panoramas, why would you not use them? I think like from the musical standpoint, I would give it 3.5 grumps out of 5. But the filmic work of the directors and directors of photography and editor probably get it to a 4. I'd give it a 4.
Yeah.
The only reason I'm not going higher than that, and I know you love it, is it does bottom out a little bit. I found myself sort of detaching a little bit in the third act, like when we meet Herod. Is it Herod, the fat guy?
You who's are like, the Christ, yes, the great Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I just like by that stage, it's like, all right. Like I know that's the Christ story of like, and everybody forsakes him and blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I just found, I always want everything to be a little bit shorter. But four grumps out of 5.
Yeah, and what you're saying, a lot of people have like, you know, everyone's like, when Peter and blah, blah. But one of the great overlooked songs is a song that Mary does with Peter. When he gets, Peter will deny me 3 times, will deny me. And then they have the denial. I think I've seen you somewhere. I remember. And then him and Mary sing the, can we start again? I think you've made your point now. It's like such an underrated song. You really, it's fucking great.
Yeah.
But next time it's on the main stage, we'll go see it.
Okay.
Because me and my sister and my friend Bean, we always see it because we love it so much. And we always love to have, big conversations afterwards about it. Because it's just how they do, how they always do. Like Herod's always a very flamboyant character. How they do the priests, you know, how they do. And I will say this, I have never been disappointed by Simon. The Simon song, you know. You give me power and glory.
Yeah.
That's in on stage. That's always played by the Judas understudy, so it's always a really strong person. And most of the time, the Simon song steals the show.
All right, we got to get going because Evie's stepping up to the mic now. You want to say something, Evie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, gross. She's such a loud kisser. All right, 5 grumps from me. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Give me shaking. Come here.
Love you.
All right. We love you very much. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.